Good afternoon, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And as ever, I am just so delighted to be here working with you. And so for all of you who have come today to listen to the program, I would like to say welcome and thank you. This program is a little different from other programs that I've done in the past, and I just felt that today I had to discuss finances and financial markets and where I perceive we are in the economy today. And that might not seem like a spiritual topic, but I do believe it is, because we have responsibility for our families and ourselves, and part of that responsibility does cover finances. And that's why I feel that it is necessary to bring forth this information today. I'd like to start with a little bit of history. I think it was in 2002, I started this in 2001, Conversations with Caesar. And for those of you who might not be familiar with that work, Julius Caesar came to me and dictated a most remarkable book, because it is about what he experienced after he was assassinated. And it truly is a remarkable work, and there are others who came forth in that book to discuss those times. And if you're interested in history and Rome, you would be interested in that book. One of the things that Julius Caesar discussed was the world today as he perceives it from the other side. And one of the things that he suggested to people was to pay down debt. And interesting enough, when the next book came along and discussed that very topic, that was Viva Papa. Pope John Paul came to me right as he died, and as he was in state each day. The messages that are in there are so remarkable, so beautiful. And I did a lot of research scientifically from what he said, because he talks about earth changes, and put that together as a companion book with Viva Papa. Interestingly, one of the same things he discusses in his book, again, pay down debt. And so the spiritual hierarchy, not only these two individuals, but other work that I have received from masters and from archangels, where they had given information, journey to the other side, this same admonition is being given about pay down debt. And November the 17th, I received an email from Tom Kenyon. And for those of you who might not be familiar with their work, he works with Mary Magdalene, and he also works with Hathors. And this was, and I have a great deal of respect for Tom Kenyon, by the way. I have followed his work, been on some of his sacred journeys, and so I'm very fond of Tom. And on that particular date, one of the messages that came forth from Hathors and had to do with the downturn in the economy. And they say this: we said this 2 years ago and indicated that November of 2007 would be the most likely last window where this would take place, and indeed it is unfolding. We wish to say to you, however, that the situation is far worse than it currently realized, that you would do well to prepare yourself for difficult times. I got that message, and yes, I was certainly interested in what they had to say, but I was not prompted to do the radio show that information. It disturbed me on the day that they call Black Friday, where Christmas shopping becomes, the kick off for the season, intensified with the merchants and one of the women coming out of there, up the hill, apartment store in New York, went into the house, had a bunch of bags that she had carrying out of her purse. Talked to her about it, and she says, "Oh, I spent a whole lot more money than what I make, but I'm doing my bit to keep the economy sound." So yes, they have encouraged us to spend a lot more than what we make, not keep our finances balanced, and that rather disturbed me. But again, I did not plan on this radio show with that information. Here's the thing that really was, how shall we say, a tip of the iceberg that I was seeing that really made me decide to do the show today. And that was an article, November 29th. They run on Florida's local government investment pool. And it was a very interesting article. It talked about the structured investment vehicles, or SIVs, which are among the subprime mortgage debt fill contrivances, was behind this run on that pool. And that bothered me when I saw that. And then right after that, this was on December the 5th, there was another debate on one of the municipal pools of the Montana. So Montana was caught in another debate because they also had some of these investment vehicles in their particular short-term investment pool, and so there was a lot of discussion on that too. The article on Florida's, I think, was very well balanced. The individual who wrote this was talking about they didn't see the risk as being so great. They gave percentages and so forth. But one of the things that they mentioned was that the fund had invested $650 million in certificates deposits in Countrywide Bank, and there was some risk that Countrywide might go under. And the two concerns were, will there be a run on other investment pools, and if other funds stop investing in asset-backed CDs, this might further the credit crunch and increase spreads for other products. So those two things were sort of stirring around in my mind, and it was the impetus, so to speak, to put together some information to discuss this, not in a fearful manner, but if there is liability out there, what do we as the individual homeowner who maybe does not have a mortgage that is ready to default? We have made our mortgage payments. We don't have to worry about that. But what is our, you might say, exposure to this problem that is starting to raise its head? Because it just seems like this is going to be like dominoes, where one domino hits another domino and we have a domino effect and this house of cards falls down. So what should we be doing as an individual, or if anything, do we have to worry or be concerned in any manner about that? So this is the direction that we're going in to discuss what I think is some risk out there and what we should be doing as an individual to protect ourselves. All of these articles and things that I am mentioning, the websites are up on my show information. So if there is something that you wish to research, you've got the information there. So you can go to these websites and you can look up the information. So what I'm saying here is, don't take anything that I have to say to heart. Go do some of your own research and then go within and check with your own resources to see if your soul's guidance agrees or disagrees with what we're talking about. I think one of the reasons that a lot of this has become part of the headlines is answered by an article that I picked up today at Money Central MSN, and there was an article there by John Markham. He had interviewed a hedge fund manager by Mike Burry. Well, maybe it's Burry, B-U-R-R-Y is the way you might pronounce it. But so he's a gentleman who, you know, as a hedge fund, would certainly understand what is going on. And one of the things that he did is he started studying the fine print in the prospectuses from banks. And one of the things that he discusses is how the subprime loans were put together and the ratings that they were given. He says that inexplicably, they carried an investment-grade rating. And that means that institutional money managers at mutual fund companies and pension funds who were obligated to invest conservatively could still buy these instruments without recognizing their danger. So I wanted to mention that because we might wonder, well, how in the world did these funds, these investment funds and pools, get into this situation? And it is because they were carrying an investment grade rating. And so the question is, who else out there would want a higher return on interest with an investment grade piece of paper? One place that I think is really good to start to try to understand, you know, even after you get an explanation, it's hard to understand. They call them explanation of these crazy vehicles. Yep, that is. There's a website that I felt was particularly interesting. As I said, it's listed in my show information. It is www.sivturmoil.com. And what that is a group of articles that has been collected from a lot of different sources. Bloomberg, for instance, is one of the contributors there. You'll also see on that site states in potential trouble. So they've got 6 states here that they're claiming who is having the same problem. So there's a lot of information there to give you really what I feel is a good background for all of that. The article there from Bloomberg, I feel is very fascinating. Don't really want to get into reading this other than it's a lot of information about where the banks are, where the different pools are, explains how a lot of this is being carried, and it really is not carried on the bank's books. So a lot of this is hidden to an extent until things start to blow up. And one of the problems is that since this started to turn around in August, there is not the purchasers coming forth now to buy these, and this is how the money is made. They're buying and selling. New people come in and buy, and they're putting up the money to pay out the older pieces of paper. Now, one of the places that something that I really want to discuss is, and this is kind of the crux of what we're talking about. If you go to those there is one other website, and that is the International Financial Law Review, That is IFLR. These are two gentlemen who are very familiar with structured investment vehicles. They've been in the midst of working with them, giving reviews on them. And so their article is really fascinating because they give a diagram of just how these work. And they talk about the legal structure. They talk about the legal issues, the contracts, tax considerations. So from the legal point of view, this is an excellent site. These two gentlemen are in England, and it is their supplement guide to structured finance. So that, I think, is really a fascinating article. We come to another gentleman, and his name is Weiss. You might be familiar with this gentleman's name because he does, he gathers a lot of information from prospectuses, from reports that insurance companies file, that banks file, and he rates insurance companies and he rates banks. And he has put together a fascinating list. And what this list is money funds. You know, we all kind of know about money funds today. I think a lot of us are working with them. They are funds that we believe are very safe. They usually have check writing privileges. And so there's a lot of people out there who presently are using money funds. But the question is, since these SIVs have been rated as an investment grade, does your money market have money in them? And I certainly can't answer that because you might not even find it in the prospectus. But you can call your fund for that information if this is something that is in your mind that you want money someplace that is safe. And so I'm coming from this from the point of view of safety. Money funds are not really an investment per se, but a place that we park money to have available to us in an emergency. And some people set up money markets to pay their taxes. You know, if for whatever reason your bank is not collecting money for your real estate taxes, when they're due, you might owe, you know, $2,000, $3,000, or $4,000, and a money market would be a good place to accumulate those funds. Or you might have a money market to for repairs on your house, or if you have a business, you might have a money market for short-term expenses. I mean, there's a multitude of things that you might have a money market for, but the question is, you know, just how. Where are they investing the money? Up to this point, we always felt they were short-term and particularly safe. Now, there is a money market out there, and this is what we are getting to. There are money markets that invest 100% of their money in U.S. Treasury vehicles, nothing else. They have set up the fund that is the only place where they can put the money. Now, true, the rate of return is a little bit less than some of the other money markets because they are not hedging any interest in any other place other than the Treasury money funds. And there is a list of these money funds. that you can download right into your computer. Martin Weiss has put this together, and I gave you the link if you choose to check that out. As I said, the rate of return is a little bit less, but you know that you have your money someplace that is going to be safe. Let's face it, if the government cannot pay its treasury bills, if they can't pay that debt, nothing's going to happen. So that would be, I feel, one of the best places that you can put your money. Now, some of them are American Century's Capital Preservation Fund. That's putting the money in 100% into the Treasury money funds. Another one is U.S. Global's U.S. Treasury Securities Cash Fund. That's the one that I have. Not that I'm recommending that one, other than it is a fund that you can open with $1,000, and you can write checks against it for $50 or more. And if you choose to save on a monthly basis, you can put as low as $50 a month into it. And so I would recommend that you consider looking at this, where your money market funds are, if where it is being invested, and if you like the idea of having a U.S. Treasury money fund only, this is a place where you can get the list of them without doing a whole lot of research. So this would be basically from the standpoint of safety. Now, if there are some people out there who have some comments or some questions, if I can answer them, our number here is 877-876-5227. If you're in Canada, it is 888-815-9756. I have done a lot of research in this area. I don't want to give too much of the information because I don't want to discuss this from the point of view of fear. I want to discuss it mainly from a positive point of view, that we're starting to see some of the turbulence out there in the financial markets, and we might think, well, it's not going to affect us because I'm paying my mortgage and I don't have a problem with that. I don't have higher interest rates. I don't have an adjustable mortgage. I've got a fixed mortgage. I'm paying it. I don't see a problem. And what I'm trying to say here is we don't know how deep the problem is going to be. I do know this, that those on the other side are telling us to pay down debt. So I want to talk a little bit about paying down debt, putting some money aside every month that is going to, for certain, I mean, you've got money where you're going for many places. You know, you have retirement funds. Maybe you're thinking about children's college education. You might have a 401k at work where you're putting money in, and let's hope that you're doing all of these things. And you've got some short-term some short-term money in places for emergencies. But I have to say, I have taken in the past applications from people who wanted to refinance their mortgage because they could get a mortgage with a lower rate. And until we started doing an inventory of all of the debt that they owed, they had no concept how much money they owed. They knew that they were paying the minimum payments every month. They didn't miss a payment, but they didn't know how much debt that they really owed. Now, all the things that I'm saying today might, might not have any bearing with your lifestyle, your needs, and God bless you. If you're in a position where none of these are a concern, you might be 100% organized financially, and all I can say is God bless you, you've done your homework. But for those, perhaps, who are not in that situation, I'm coming from a place of what I believe trying to serve to awaken people with perhaps some of the dangers and trying to come up with an answer that will put you in a better place if things become more turbulent. So that's the point of all of this, not to say anything that's going to concern you, but rather some suggestions that might help put you in a better place. So for one thing, it might be a good idea, if this is a concern of yours, or at least perhaps I have opened your mind to something that you need to be thinking about, it might be a good idea to really make a list of everything that you owe. In other words, how much do you owe? How many credit cards do you have? What is all of your debt? I think you have to start there to see how much you really owe and total it up and have a good feel for your obligations. And then you need to know how much your monthly obligations are. In other words, what you've got to come up every month with to pay things. And you're probably sitting in the same situation that I am. The cost of your fuel deliveries has gone up. Gasoline has gone up. I know the gas and electric here in Maryland has had a tremendous increase. Our governor has just come in and recommended a tremendous increase in all of the taxes. And unfortunately, the powers that be went along with him and put all of that into place. So we are really going through a period where we are going to be taxed very steeply in the next year. Everything, it seems, has gone up. And who knows where this crunch is, what other areas this crunch is going to hit us with. So it's important to know how much we need to run our household. In other words, what are our fixed expenses? You see, I think if you really get a feeling for how much all of your debt is, how much all of your fixed expenses are, what you've got to come up with every month, it might have a tendency to help you spend less in non-critical areas. For instance, on the news, one of the things that I saw during this Christmas season was how children were demanding, not asking, demanding high-priced toys and things for Christmas. And maybe if we're put under that pressure, we won't give in. We'll scale back unnecessary expenses. So the thing would be to calculate how much you need monthly. That is a fixed expense. In other words, you can't get away from it. Maybe, you know, your house payment, your gas and electric, your telephone, the fixed expenses that you are obligated to.
Hello?
Oh, yes. I didn't realize we had a caller. I'm sorry. Your name?
Hey, it's Rebecca. How are you?
Hi, Rebecca.
I was listening to your show, and I had a couple of comments, and maybe they'll turn into questions.
Well, what did you think of it so far?
Well, I have been kind of under the impression that the financial structure is actually kind of crumbling right now, and that what we're going to go to is more of the barter system, and eventually when we move to the fifth dimension, we're not going to need money.
That might be true, but from here to there is, I believe, going to be a turbulent time.
Mm-hmm.
And here's really the reason, you know, you've hit the nail on the head, so to speak. This mm-hmm. is the reason why I'm discussing this, because what I have seen is, and maybe it doesn't apply to you, maybe it doesn't apply to anyone else that is listening, but I have seen people who are deep in debt, and if you are in debt, you have no leeway, do you? In other words, if you've gotten to the point where you are overburdened with debt, then you have no maneuverable room to make your way through the turbulent time from here to there. And I do agree with you, Rebecca. I'm inclined to think that the system is going to change, but any change in our lives, when especially when it involves a lot of people, is going to be painful.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm saying is just some thoughts to help get through that painful time to make it a little easier. And I suspect that one of the things that we've got to do is stop spending as much on things that are non-essential.
Uh-huh.
So you had another comment.
And I forgot what it was.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Gosh, what was the other comment? Oh, I know. I had also heard recently about, instead of making higher payments towards the credit cards, and I understand, you know, when you make higher, you can get them paid off sooner, to make the minimum payment and then potentially look at anything left over, putting it into more of a safer vehicle.
Well, again, I would say it depends on where a person is. That's why I think it's important to start with a piece of paper and start writing these things down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every person is individual, and their needs are going to be different.
Uh-huh.
And I would say you got a couple things there to look at, Rebecca. One of the thoughts would be, if you paid the minimum payment, you see, it would depend on how much the debt was on that card, and
right.
what is the interest rate that you're paying on that.
Right.
In other words, how much are you paying in interest every month?
Mm-hmm.
And the other question would be, do you have any emergency money?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people have none.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, they have no extra money whatsoever, because every penny that comes into the household
mm-hmm.
is going out to pay the necessary expenses and to pay on the credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a person is in that situation, what they would do would be completely different from, say, another person that's not carrying the debt. You know, there are organizations who, and I can't think of the name of them right now. I should have thought about this earlier. But there are organizations that an individual can call in, and they will pay your debt for you. In other words, basically, you make a decision to cut up your credit cards.
Uh-huh.
And they make an agreement with the credit card companies with the interest. In other words, they're basically going to take over the payments. You're agreeing to cut up your credit cards. You're agreeing to make to let the organization make the payments. In other words, they're negotiating a situation for you where you're not going to be paying interest on your credit card. They're paying it down, but you've cut up the credit cards.
Well, it's consumer credit counselors is one place you can go.
Well, that's what I had in mind, but I couldn't. I think they have another name for that, and I couldn't.
They might. Now, I did some reading on that on the web, and a lot of those companies actually work for the credit card companies.
There is one that isn't independent, and I couldn't think of their name. What I'll have to do is look it up, and yes, you're right. You don't want anybody that's tied into the credit card companies. Yeah, it's
yes.
real. You know, as a consumer, we really have to read everything, don't we?
Yes, you do. In fact, I had checked out one of those companies, and I had a lower interest rate than what they could negotiate for me with the credit card companies, and that's another thing for consumers to take a look at as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this particular case, they were not willing to waive an interest fee. Another one is to, if you can, consolidate debt over to a lower interest credit card. Do a balance transfer, and that's the way, too. But you have to make sure, then, you don't run up that card that you just transferred.
Well, you know, that's excellent advice, but what the credit card companies are doing now is they're looking into how much debt a person has, and that's where the crunch is. If you've got more debt, they're not willing to allow you to roll it over into a lower interest rate, because what they're saying is if a person has a lot of debt, more than they think that they can pay, then the risk is greater, is their thinking.
Yes, and it's true. I think there's a certain cutoff where that no longer works, but it may be an option for some people. Have you heard anything about a lawsuit against some of these credit card companies? One of the things that I experience is the date may be the 26th of the month that your payment's due, and then they move it to the 25th. But you kind of in your mind have the 26th. That was something that I had to become aware of, that they can move the date around a little bit. And I
haven't heard of that one, but would that surprise me? Because if you're late, they can put a late fee on, which some of these late fees are pretty ridiculous.
Yes, and you have to pay for some of them by 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Well, I'm on the West Coast, so I would have to make that payment by 2 o'clock. And so these are little things, too, that I found out that, you know, into checking into stuff that might be something people would want to be aware of. Or if you pay, it was a department store credit card. If you paid over the phone or on the web, it took 4 days to post. So even if you paid it the day it was due, it wouldn't post for 4 days, and then they get your float.
Well, what I do, Rebecca, do you pay your bills through your bank, like your checking account?
I go through with online banking.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I don't have it set up for automatically to pay. But I will go in and pay through that way. But some of those, this was a department store, and I won't say which one,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't post the day that you make that. So you need to make it like 3 or 4 days before the actual due date, or you can still be late even though you paid it on the day it was due.
That's why I like to pay through my bank.
Uh-huh.
I pay all my bills through online banking, and I set it up to... Well, I set them up to get there a day ahead of time.
Right. So you already know then that they need it, like, whatever amount of time ahead of time for it to post to your account.
Well, and then there's another thing, too. If there's a company that is trying to maneuver postage, you know, they look at these dates. They say they didn't receive it by a certain date,
mm-hmm.
and they had it in plenty time to get it and post it by that date.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have a layer of protection if you pay through the bank, because a lot of these companies, the bank doesn't really send a check. They send it through, automatically pay it through the system. So some companies, if they're small companies, they'll actually write a check. But your large companies, they're not writing checks. You know, they send this... through the banking system, and they have proof of the date that that company received those funds, because
mm-hmm.
they're transferred on a certain date. So I'm a big believer in online banking. That's one of the reasons, because you have proof of the date and the time that company actually received the money. You know, the bank has that. So they can't say, oh, this got held up in the mail. I didn't get this until the day after. And if you have a complaint, then you go through the bank and let them deal with it, which I love.
Right. However, though, sometimes at the bottom in fine print, it will say will not post until like 3 business days. And I don't know why they're able to get away with that, especially if it's like on a Saturday. And so anyway, you know, there's things that they're doing where the consumer has to just be really careful now and read everything that's going on.
Oh, yeah.
So.
I haven't had a problem with that. I've been doing online banking, I want to say, 3 or 4 years. You know, time goes mm-hmm. by so fast.
Yeah.
But it seems to me I've been doing online banking for several years, and I've never had a problem.
Yes, overall, most of the places are just really good about it. I just ran up against one company, and they also issued a card for the department store, but mm-hmm. then they issued a regular discharge card that you could use elsewhere. And I know people who've gotten caught when they send in the bill, or the bill comes, mm-hmm. they think they're making the payment for, like, the major credit card, but it was actually due for the store card, and then they get a late fee on that. So it's just some ways that I think things can be real confusing, especially if consumers have a lot of other things going on in their lives, which most of us do.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, kind of raising our consciousness that there is something going on. There definitely is something going on with the banking system. And
something else that I'd like to mention, you brought up an area that reminded me of something, Rebecca, and that is, you know, if you go to some of these big companies and you buy a big appliance, they'll give you like 6 months. If you pay the bill off within 6 months, there's no interest due, or if you mm-hmm. pay it off within a year, there's no interest due.
Right.
Well, you got to make sure that you get that paid off in time, or else you've got all that accrued interest that you will be charged for that whole year.
Exactly, and it's interest on top of interest, and sometimes that rate can be like 15%.
Oh, well, I would say 25.
Well, you're probably right. But, yeah, that's another way where consumers especially, have a new living room set before Christmas and not due till 2009.
Well, what I do is, because I just bought a range, and I bought it from a company that if you pay it off within a year, there's no interest due.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I took the amount and I set it up for 11 payments
mm-hmm.
and had it set it on my online banking so that would be automatically paid off in 11 months instead of the 12, so I wouldn't be caught with that. So that's another way to use online banking for those kinds of accounts.
Now, would that then advantageous to, like, have that go into a separate account where you're actually, like, paying yourself? I guess it would depend on what the interest rate is that you're getting back. So, you know, you have the money, the total amount, by the 11 months, and then you make a big balloon payment.
Well, you know, you can do that. It's easy to get caught up in not remembering and getting it paid off the date. This is why I say everybody has different needs. Now I have three different money funds that I have set up that automatically has money going into them every month, and they are designated for different purposes.
Uh-huh.
So as long as I have money that's automatically saved, I calculate it what I can, you know, what I need and what I can put away, and then these other things are not so critical.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe part of our higher consciousness is being financially responsible
mm-hmm.
and being aware of what's going on. And there's one other thing that I wonder if you would talk about, and then I'll have you talk about that. I'm gonna hang up. But how there's these reverse mortgages, and they're going into these elderly couples, and they're saying,
mm-hmm.
we'll sign over your house, and we'll give you a monthly payment of so much.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be something good to discuss if there's older listeners, because...
Well, I'd be glad to talk about those, because I've looked into that. I think it's an interesting issue.
Yeah, if a person can outlive what their equity mm-hmm. is in their house, it's okay. But
yeah, no, I've had people ask me about that, the reverse mortgages. And, yeah, I'd be glad to talk about that, Rebecca. And,
okay.
You know, I thank you for bringing forth these issues, because these questions, these concerns, planning and being financially sound, I think is very important today. And I thank you so much for calling in and bringing this up, because, see, our discussion here might resonate with someone.
Right.
And they might do a little bit differently
mm-hmm.
and relieve, you know, if you're owing money and you don't know how to pay your bills, mm-hmm. it causes an awful lot of tension and pressure in a family.
No, I know. That was something that I think split up my family because I wanted to pay things off. And it was like, oh, we have this much credit line, and most of our equity had been taken out of our house. And so when we did sell the house, we ended up with nothing. And sometimes people don't realize either that, you know, when that equity's gone, it's gone.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, Rebecca. I was talking to a lady who was, she was customer service with a credit card company, and this is what she said. She's agreeing with you that people were running up their bills during the year, and then at the end of the year, they were pulling money out of their equity to pay off their credit card so that they could start spending again for Christmas.
Right, and it's usually as a second loan. So maybe assuming people bought a house for $100,000 and they know it's now worth $200,000, but they've taken out $75,000, they only have $25,000 left.
That is if the value of the house doesn't go down.
Correct, absolutely, absolutely.
Because, what's happening now for a lot of people is the value of their house has gone down, and this is going to cut off their credit line.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And so, and then if they've run up debt through the year, hoping they can pay it off at the end, and they've had this big change that's happened at the end of this year, they can be in real problems then.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one other thing, too. You mentioned, like, 401K. Another can be stock purchase program, where they take the price that's either at the beginning of the quarter or at the end of the quarter, which is ever less, and then they discount at 15%. Well, a person has to take a look at if the stock, when they buy it, you know, on that the next quarter coming up, there can be a fluctuation in price, and that price can drop. And people still think, oh, I got that stock at 15%.
You know, it sounds like you have done a lot of research, Rebecca. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm an econ major, and I've worked at Fortune 500 companies, so. Yeah.
How marvelous. So, you really have, you really sat down and looked at this from a lot of different perspectives.
Oh, yeah, and like you said, I'm hoping this will trigger somebody, and I'm asking these questions. And another thing, too, was I used to have what I'd call financial uproar. I would wait to balance my checkbook, and then I'd have to call around to my friends and get money to put in the account. And it got to be that was too painful. It was less painful to be responsible about my checking account than doing this financial uproar, is what I called it. And there was a lot of fear-based, and so I went to somebody who was like a financial counselor and went with my ex-husband where we could both sit down and she could ask the questions and he would be responsible for saying something. If I tried to get the information out of him, it never worked. But going to a third party really, really helped for them to ask these neutral questions and stuff like that. So, you know, if anybody is in conflict, which usually it is in one family, one may want to save and the other may want to spend. So.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. I've heard women say, well, it doesn't do me any good to save because as soon as I say something, he sees it and he takes it and spends it.
I know. I thought the same thing. I might as well get on the gravy train, too, so.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, hey, as always, it's so great talking to you, and you just have a merry, merry Christmas.
You too, Rebecca.
Okay, and don't forget about the reverse mortgage, too.
I'm going to mention it, yeah. Okay.
Take care, hon.
Okay, dear.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Our phone number here is 877-876-5227, and I hope that the conversation that we're having is helping you to think about your finances, do some planning with them, and make your life much easier. Rebecca asked me to comment on the reverse mortgage. And again, like so many financial decisions, it is based on the individual's need. And everybody is different, and this is certainly is not one program that fits all. And it sounds like a marvelous idea. Okay, you've got a house, you have an equity, and here's a period of time where you can take that equity and you can turn it into a stream of income. I think you have to be 62 to be able to do this. And they look at the value of the house, and basically what they're doing is very much like an annuity in the sense that they take your age and they calculate the number of years that you would be living, and then they take the value of the house and tell you how much the monthly payment would be. This is a situation where it's like anything else. Nothing comes free, and the interest rate is very high. So they are lending money out to the individual, and the money that they are lending out is at a very high interest rate. That's the first thing that I would say. The second thing is that I would say to look at is what do you want to do by way of family? Now, if there is someone out there and they have no family that they wish to leave something for, this wouldn't be a question. But let's say you have a home and you want to be able to leave your children something. Maybe your children are in need. Maybe they are in a situation where they need help too, and you feel like, well, I want to stay in my house. You see, that basically is the situation. You have a person who is older, and they don't have the finances. They're on a fixed income, and their house is paid for, and that is the only thing that the only asset that they own is the house. And so this idea of income coming in sounds great. And if they don't have a desire to leave this to someone, that might be the thing for them. However, there's some other things that you have to think about. The money that's coming back, is that enough to maintain the house? Is the person physically able to maintain the house? Houses have a certain comfort zone to be able to stay there, but then is it the kind of house that's going to take a lot of maintenance? And the person who turns this into a reverse mortgage, even with this income coming in, are they going to be able to maintain the house? Are they going to be able to stay in the house? Do they wish to leave some money to family members? Now, they might say, well, I'll take out a life insurance policy. If my house is worth $300,000 and I use all this up, as they are sending me the income and there's nothing left, when I die, I'll take an insurance policy out so my family will have the $300,000. Well, it doesn't work because the cost of a life insurance policy to cover the mortgage at that age is extremely expensive, and the amount of money that is coming in from the monthly payments from the house is not really sufficient, as I see it, to then be able to pick up an insurance policy. So if you're trying to resolve some of the things that you might think of if you're considering a reverse mortgage, how much interest are they charging me, and is this the best way to go? I think once you start looking at the interest that you're being charged for these monthly payments and how that grows, you might think a little bit differently about the plan. The other thing is, if I'm living in my home, am I going to be able to maintain it? You have a big lawn. Who cuts the grass? How much is that to maintain? If I'm not well, am I going to be able to clean the house, to take care of myself? The money coming in now is a fixed level. As inflation comes by and the cost of living goes up, will there be some point where even that guaranteed income coming in, is that going to be enough to sustain me 5 or 10 years down the road? So these are all questions that, you know, this is like any other financial decision that you make. You have to take a piece of paper and you write down your objectives. In other words, you know, one side is the pluses, the other side's the negatives. What am I expecting from this? What are my needs? And you put those on one side. The other side, what are the drawbacks? And with everything, it truly takes thought because there's so many pitfalls in there. My friends, we're up to the hour. I hope that our discussion has triggered something in your mind that will be helpful to you. Let me know. My address is Carolyn@CarolynEvers.com. Let me know what you thought about this program today. Goodbye for now.